It's time for justice. Welcome to the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show, heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. on 97.3 FM WRIR. I'm your host, Marty Wegbright. This show is written and produced by Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. We give free, civil, non-criminal legal aid to low-income people in Richmond, Petersburg, Charlottesville, and surrounding cities and counties. Coming up on this week's show...
We all need family. We need to be needed. So these young people who are trying to make that transition without family have all the kinds of challenges that you would think they might have, and then some extra ones from coming from the circumstances they've been in abused, been in homes where they were abused or neglected.
Virginia's First Lady Ann Holton talks about Virginia's broken foster care system and how to fix it, and an important item about how you can get your credit report for free during the next 9 months in our weekly News You Can Use. All that and more coming up. Stay with us. This show is supported in part by a grant from the Virginia Law Foundation. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society and gives only general legal information. The Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show is heard every Wednesday at 12:30 on WRIR, 97.3 FM, Richmond Independent Radio, and is made possible by community radio volunteers at WRIR.
Ain't gonna let discrimination turn me around, turn me around, turn me around. Gonna let discrimination turn me around. I'm gonna keep on walking, keep on talking, marching up to freedom.
And now, this week's News You Can Use. Under a nationwide class action lawsuit, you may qualify for 6 to 9 months of daily monitoring of your credit report, credit lock privileges, plus unlimited access to your credit report and score, all for free. To be eligible, you must have had any form of open credit account, a charge card, student loan, auto loan, or mortgage, at any time between January 1, 1987 and May 28, 2008. An estimated 160 million Americans meet that standard. The class action against TransUnion, one of the three major credit reporting agencies, dates from 1998. Plaintiffs charged that TransUnion sold consumers' personal data to marketers in violation of federal law. TransUnion denied all wrongdoing, but agreed to a settlement, which includes a $75 million fund to compensate class members. If you had an open credit account at any time during the past 21 years, there's a good chance you're a member. To register a claim, you can visit a special website, www.listclassaction.com, or call toll-free 1-866-416-3470. You must sign up by September 24, 2008 to take advantage of the settlement. With this week's News You Can Use, this is your host, Marty Wegbright.
Ain't gonna let injustice turn me around, turn me around, no, turn me around. Ain't gonna let injustice turn me around. I'm gonna keep on walking, keep on talking, marching up the
Every one of Virginia's 8,000 foster children deserves a place to call home. Yet, according to a recent study funded by the Pew Charitable Trust, Virginia ranks dead last nationally in children aging out of the system without having a permanent home. Only 44% of all foster care teens in Virginia find an adoptive home, a permanent guardian, or are able to go home, compared with 72% nationally. Virginia relies heavily on expensive group homes, while shortchanging foster parents who get paid only about half of the minimal expense of caring for foster children. Fixing this shameful situation has become a calling for Virginia's First Lady Ann Holton, formerly a City of Richmond Juvenile and Domestic Relations Court judge, and before that, an attorney with Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. Earlier this year, Holton spoke at the Jepson Alumni Center of the University of Richmond in an event sponsored by the Center for Civic Engagement about Virginia's broken foster care system and how to fix it. The Central Virginia Legal Aid radio show was there. Here's part one of this two-part talk by Virginia's First Lady, Ann Holton.
When I made the decision to leave the bench, that I would have the opportunity to spotlight something that I cared about, and I knew immediately that I wanted to do something with older kids in foster care. The kids I had gotten to know through the court, and we do get to know foster kids pretty intimately in the court. We watch their progress close way. The courts review cases where whenever a child has been removed from their home due to abuse and neglect or other issues, the court reviews those cases immediately the day after the child is removed, and then we have a steady set of hearings throughout the time the child is in care. We do a 5-day hearing, we do a full trial when the child's been out 30 days, and then thereafter we're doing regular, every so many months, reviews the entire time the child is out of the home. So you really do get to know these children very up close and personal. And in fact, when I left the bench, I knew I was going to leave if Tim prevailed in his election, and so I turned in my resignation letter literally pretty much the day after Election Day. But I kept doing, while I was cleaning up offices and planning inaugural balls and moves and all of that, I continued to do my Wednesday dockets, which was my foster care docket, because I had to say goodbye to some of those kids. And for some of them, the sad but true fact was that I, being their judge on their case for 4 or 5 years, was one of the more steady influences in their lives. And would that it were not so, but I needed to take that occasion to see those children one more time. One nice thing is that I've gotten to see some of them again now in my new hat, in various kinds of fun ways, really. Which has been a real treat. But what I remember about what I came away from that judicial experience was a passionate sense that of young people who were striving mightily to become successful adults, and really working hard despite some very, very difficult circumstances to make that transition. But doing it without family is simply not easy. All of us need family, and this is intuitive. We know this. We need family when we're 2 and 4, but we also absolutely need it when we're 15 and 16 and 18, as mine almost are, and when we maybe don't think we need it quite so much. We need it again when we're 21 and when we're 25. We need family when we're 45 and 50. I still call my mother up for advice, and she me. We all need family. We need to be needed. So these young people who are trying to make that transition without family have all the kinds of challenges that you would think they might have, and then some extra ones coming from the circumstances they've been in, abused, been in homes where they were abused or neglected. They have some behavior problems. They've been in and out of foster care that may have added to their behavior problems. They've got some real challenges. And I came away from my time on the bench with a sense that Virginia wasn't really, we were still scratching our heads over how to help these young people. Some of the younger kids in foster care, we at least knew what we needed to do with them. The research was good. Our practice models were good. We knew what we needed to do was to front load services to mom and dad. We needed to, the day that child walks into care and hopefully before, we needed to offer drug treatment to mom if that's what she needed. We needed to offer resources to dad. We needed to pile on all the help we possibly can and get those family circumstances fixed so that we can get that child back home as quickly as possible. If that's not going to work, we need to quickly figure out that it's not going to work and start looking for alternate family for that child. And we can do that. And we have had really substantial successes in increasing the numbers increasing how quickly we return children home, increasing the numbers of successful adoptions of younger children. But my anecdotal experience on the bench was that we were still scratching our heads a little bit over how to help these older kids. My experience since leaving the bench has only confirmed that. I'm pleased to have had the opportunity over the last couple of years to have had the benefit of some really great research and help from some real national experts who've helped us look at Virginia's situation across the state, and it's absolutely confirmed what I observed on the bench, and that is that we're not doing a very good job helping these young people successfully transition to adulthood. We're not doing a very good job helping them achieve permanency, connections to some kind of permanent family. On any given day in Virginia, there are 4,000 plus older kids in foster care. The typical daily population is around 8,000, about half of them age 12 and up. Of those, the research has shown that we have a very, very low rate of successfully returning them either to their own family, extended family, or to adoption, which are the three key forms of real permanency: getting back to your biological family, getting to extended family, or getting adopted. Virginia, in fact, there was a study that came out this summer from the Pew Commission, released in June of this year, ranking the states. And, you know, Virginia, we're used to being, when states get ranked, we're used to being in a good spot on those lists. So we're the best managed state for business and the best place for education and this, that, and the other. We've got a lot of things going right, but this is one of the areas where I'm sorry to say, the Pew Commission report listed us as actually the worst state in the nation in terms of the percentage of our young people aging out of foster care without permanent families. So that's what they call it when you hit 18 or 21, whenever it is you leave the foster care system without having gone back to permanent family. Now, I can argue with that number. Well, we're not really the worst. Our relative numbers of kids in foster care are lower than some other states, and there's some explanation you can give for that statistic. But the truth of the matter is, we're not in the part of the list we want to be in, with being the worst in the nation in terms of the number of kids who age out of foster care without family. And one of the other really strong conclusions from their research was that we are overusing congregate care in Virginia, that meaning group homes and residential treatment facilities. We're putting way too many of our children into these really very expensive forms of care, but that are not successfully moving kids towards reuniting with their families. In fact, they're not in family life, family circumstances at all. They're removed often from their communities far across the state in these large institutional settings. Virginia's rate right now, Virginia has about a quarter of our kids in foster care are in residential treatment centers or group homes, about 24%. If you look at the older kids, it's actually looking at that entry cohort figure the Child Trends data folks did with us, actually 52% of the kids that came into care in the most, I think this was 2006 figures, 52%, more than half of the kids 12 and up who came into care that year went directly into a residential treatment facility or a group home setting. So really the place of choice when you come into foster care is a group home, and it's not a place of choice. It's not what anybody intends, but when we haven't got enough foster families, when we haven't been successful at helping reunite folks with stay with their biological family or connect with their extended family, it's the default option, and the default option has become the preferred option in practice.
You're listening to a talk given earlier this year by Virginia's First Lady Ann Holton at the Jepson Alumni Center of the University of Richmond about Virginia's broken foster care system and how to fix it. We'll be back in a moment. If you're just joining us, the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show now rejoins Virginia's First Lady Ann Holton in a talk given earlier this year about Virginia's broken foster care system and how to fix it.
So we're not doing well on achieving permanency. We're overusing congregate care. To kind of translate that into, and then those kids who age out of those group, when you leave the group home, where do you go? You don't have any family. You've got some folks you worked with somewhere along the way, but you don't really have the somewhere to go home to. I met a young woman in the fall of last year at one of Virginia's colleges. Great young lady, had aged out of foster care, and actually really a remarkable young woman. When I first met her back in Wytheville in her hometown through the social services folks there right before she entered college. She was then 18. She had come into foster care at age 15. Her parents were running a meth lab. Were both, when I met her, in jail and going to be there for a long, long time. She herself had been using meth when she came in. No surprise, that was the circumstance she was living in. She had spent the better part of her time in foster care in a congregate care facility, kind of had bounced around from one to another. Obviously had some behavior problems in the past. When I met her, she was clean, looking great, had graduated from high school, and was on her way off to one of our four-year institutions here in Virginia, where I got to see her again a few months later, checked in on her, and she was doing great, and she's going to do great, and she's resilient, and she's going to be one of the success stories, I'm absolutely convinced. But I asked her somewhere along the way, well, where are you going for Thanksgiving? Well, mumble, mumble, mumble. You know, what is a young lady like that going to do when it's time to move off campus and she needs somebody to co-sign a lease? What's she going to do when something goes wrong in terms of what her financial package is and how she thinks she was going to make all that work? What's she going to do during the summer if she can't figure out how to make ends meet? Who's going to call her on her 21st birthday? Where's she going to go? Who's going to walk her down the aisle? She doesn't have that crucial link of permanent family. And I say that she's going to be successful because I believe it, because she's a strong young lady. But the truth is that those kids who age out without permanent family are at great risk of becoming homeless, at great risk of ending up on the welfare rolls, at great risk of not completing their education, dropping out. She's lucky to be one of the ones who has got her high school degree, because percentage-wise, kids who age out without care often do not. But having started college, she's at great risk of not completing it. Great risk of becoming incarcerated or ending up with serious mental health difficulties as an adult. None of those facts are surprising to any of you. So what are we going to do about this? What's the solution here? Well, in a way, it's kind of obvious that what we need to do is recruit more families and figure out how to support families better. And really, we need to start with supporting the biological family, the birth family. No need to take that child home if there's ways that we can address the issues at home. One area in Virginia that's really been quite a success story in this area is the city of Hampton has been doing great things in this area really for years, and the rest of the social service folks all across the state are getting sick of hearing those of us at the state level talk about Hampton, because they're like, yeah, we know, we're all supposed to go do what they've done. But the truth is that they really are what the national experts we're working with call a found pilot, because they've come in and looked and say, we don't have to run a pilot here, we can look and see. Hampton has reduced over their last 5 to 10 years, they've reduced their congregate care population down to 6% of the population, whereas the statewide average is 24%, the national rate is 18%, we're told the best practices would be somewhere under 10%, and there Hampton is at 6%. Meanwhile, they've reduced their foster care population by 44%, so they're not just getting kids out of institutions, they're getting them back to their own family, getting them to extended family. So I just was going to give one example of how do you get them back home. Well, they had one young man who was in a residential treatment facility dealing with his anger problems, and he did have some anger problems and some behavior problems, but they'd been giving him treatment and they were doing things the way that one should, as Hampton does, had worked hard to get a therapist that had a connection with him who was going to follow him when he went back to the community, worked hard to get all the right services in place, school lined up, and they were ready to move him home. His mom is a single mom, and this young man was maybe 15 by the time we're talking about, and he was by then a very big young man, and mom wanted him home and wanted to give it a try, but she was afraid of him. So the Hampton folks go, this is the true wraparound model. The wraparound model is figure out what it takes and find it and make it work. So they go to mom and they say, Mom, we think he's ready to come home. Are you ready to have him? I'm afraid of him. I'm afraid that if things are fine, we're all right, but that if he loses it, I'm afraid I can't manage it. What would it take, Mom, to make you feel comfortable having him home? Well, I can usually tell if he's about to escalate. If I could have somebody I could call in a heartbeat, if things were starting to get messy, if I could have two big guys to just be here, to be a presence when things get messy, I think I could handle it. The worker says, you got it. Two big guys? You want two big guys? You got it. So he goes back to his office and he looks around and, you know, most social work offices are a bunch of little women, right? So he says, I need two big guys. He goes to the Hampton football coach and says, I need two big guys. Can I hire two of your big guys and put beepers on them and have them ready to be at this mom's house within 30 minutes if things start to escalate? Sure. And so he hires a couple of football players. Kid goes home. The transition happens, and mom has her comfort level. The young man knows that these resources are there, and they make the transition successfully, and the kid's back in school and back with family. So it's just a matter of creativity. Of the one great thing in Virginia is we do have a very flexible funding system that hasn't always worked as well as it's intended to, but the Comprehensive Services Act funding system gives localities resources they can use for that kind of, so somebody can pay the Hampton football players to wear beepers if need be for months on end once the child comes home. And that's the kind of solution that we need to be finding for these kids. We need to figure out how to support them in their own families when we can. When we can't, my young lady from Withville, her parents aren't home to be rehabilitated and aren't going to be home to be rehabilitated anytime soon, but she does have some extended family. Have we pushed the envelope on finding extended family? Some of the solutions that have worked in other states, there's this fellow named Kevin Campbell who's working out on the West Coast that runs this program called Finding Families, and he's using really the internet resources. He's really using the resources that collection agencies use to find extended family connections for young people. And he claims that he can, and there's others who've been replicating his methods, that for a fairly modest sum, he's actually negotiated these collection agency software people to do it for a cut rate for the foster care crowd, that you can I want to say it was $60 a kid or something like that. It was really very, very reasonable. This the software can be made to produce 40 or more names, addresses, and phone numbers for any child that you give to him. You know, give me the child's name and social security number, and I can go at it. And then somebody, so that in a way, that's the easy part, because then somebody has to start working through those names and phone numbers and contacting those family members. But the research has shown that especially for some of these older kids who might be perceived to have behavior problems, whether they do or not, and might be intimidating to some folks, that the likeliest place for a successful placement with these young people is with extended family. And as I say, we're talking very extended family. Sometimes it may not even be somebody who knows the child. It might be Aunt Susie remembers that her niece had a baby 10 or 12 years ago, and didn't that niece have a drug problem, and whatever happened to that baby? Somebody now approaches Aunt Susie. Did you know that baby had ended up in foster care? Did you know he's looking for family? Aunt Susie might say, well, I can't do it myself, but, you know, I know Uncle Joe. He's got some resources. Maybe I can help on the weekends, and Uncle Joe can maybe live with Uncle Joe. You know, another method that's worked in many areas is family group conferencing, where you bring some of those extended family resources in together to sit down and talk. Kinship care, extended kinship care connections are one of the likeliest places to have successful placements for these older kids, but they're also some of the neediest placements. So there may be, you know, financial needs. We need to figure out how to have financial resources to support those families. We need to have training programs to know how to handle the child's behavior problems, et cetera. But extended family connections can work. And if those don't work, then absolutely we can and should, and it is possible to find alternate families for these older kids. Sometimes people kind of have a sense of giving up. Older kids, they can't get adopted. They're, you know, these kids are a handful. Who's going to take them in? Well, I'll go back to Hampton for another story. They had another young man who was in a residential treatment facility down there, and these are all true stories. I've met the young man in this story. The teenager. He's now 15. And was on a panel of kids speaking about their experiences in foster care that I helped moderate at a conference in Roanoke in the fall. This young man was at a residential treatment facility for various behavior problems and was about to get kicked out of there yet again. And sometimes what happens is kids get moved from one facility to another. And was about to get kicked out of this one, but he'd made a connection with one therapist there, or one worker, somebody who was on the staff there at this facility, and the local team went to this therapist and said, how far are you willing to go for this young man? Well, I live in a small apartment. You know, I don't really have room for him. Well, what about if we helped you get a house? So they got the local housing authority as part of the team. Everybody's part of the team. The housing authority got together, helped this gentleman get housing, set him up as a therapeutic foster care parent so that he could be compensated for the extra time he would be spending dealing with this young man's special troubles, and moved the young man in with him. He is now has now finalized his adoption of that young man and has two other young men who are living with him in various stages of proceeding to be adopted. So, you know, it can be done. It does require creativity. It's not easy.
You've been listening to part one of this two-part talk by Virginia's First Lady, Ann Holton, about Virginia's broken foster care system and how to fix it. This is the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. That's all for this week. This show is heard every Wednesday from 12:30 to 1 p.m. The show is the sole responsibility of Central Virginia Legal Aid Society. Join us next Wednesday at 12:30 p.m. when the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show airs the second half of a two-part talk by Virginia's First Lady, Ann Holton, about Virginia's broken foster care system and how to fix it. That's Law for the Rest of Us next week on the Central Virginia Legal Aid Radio Show. I'm Marty Redbrand.